History through the eyes of those who lived it. This is Hometown Heroes, presented on the air and online by the U.S. Army, proudly honoring the men and women from every branch of our armed forces whose service and sacrifice have secured our freedom. Now, the host of Hometown Heroes, Paul Leffler.
Welcome to another edition of Hometown Heroes, the program that reminds you no matter where you live in this great country of ours, no matter how big or how small your hometown might be, there are some stories out there that need to be told. We want to honor our veterans for their service and sacrifice. We want to preserve their stories so we never forget the price that's been paid for our freedom. And along that journey, we learn a lot. We're educated, we're entertained, so often inspired by these stories from our greatest generation. Today I'm in North Las Vegas, Nevada, with 95-year-old Calvin Pacetta. 95? Are you sure? You don't seem like you're acting 95, Calvin.
I sure am, 95 years old. Matter of fact, I'll never see 95 again in my life, I don't think.
So you live in North Las Vegas now. For many years, Anaheim, California was your home, but originally you grew up in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, and that was the Navy's fault?
Oh, yeah, of course, yeah. My dad was in the Navy at the time we moved to Philadelphia, and then I was born right there. Actually, the truth is that I was born by a Navy lieutenant, and he was a doctor. I'm not really positive, but I always understood it was his name was Johnson, and he was moonlighting from the USS Camden that my dad was on at the time in the Philadelphia Navy Yard, and I was born by a Navy lieutenant.
You hear that expression, well, I was born in the Navy. You really were born into the Navy. Your father had served in the Navy in World War I. When do you think the first time you put on a sailor's cap was?
I used to try my dad's hat on all the time. Used to fit over my ears. Yeah. And I used to laugh. I remember him laughing when I put that hat on. I said, well, that's where I'm going. Since I'm old enough, Pop, I'm going to the Navy. And, of course, he used to bring sailors home all the time for dinner and everything. And they'd play cards. And the sailors used to kid around with me. Like I was only 6, 7 years old at the most. And they used to always kid around with me and bring me presents all the time from around the world. And naturally, that's what I was going to do, is join the Navy.
So according to the government, you were in the Navy for 30 years, but it sounds like you've been in the Navy a lot longer than that.
Most certainly, I have. Ever since the day I was born, I guess you could say.
And I had a real hard time figuring out what house was yours here. I mean, the American flag, the Navy flag flying in your front yard, and a lighthouse and ships on the side of your wall. Pretty dead giveaway. There was a Navy man residing here. Tell me about that childhood, though. You had a big family there in Philadelphia during the Great Depression. What are some of the things you remember about those years way back when?
Being hungry. Being very, very hungry. Of course, even though my dad was in the Navy, he didn't make very much money at the time. They were land-bound because the government didn't have enough money to put these ships out for training or nothing, so he was home most of the night. Not all the time, but a good share of the time during the Depression. But after that, he was always away. I remember that, and I remember him coming home and how happy we were that he came home, you know, after being gone. I have no idea how long, because I was so young. I know it was a long time, most of the time when we did go. It was pretty hard. I remember having lots of mush, lots of beans. And remember the one time he brought a burlap sack full of meat, breaded veal or breaded cutlets or something like that. And it was quite a bit of meat. I asked him where to come, you know, how'd you get this? Actually, he wouldn't tell me, but he did tell my mother, and I overheard him talking, that he got this meat for our dog, but we never owned a dog. Well, I remember it was delicious. That was one of my better meals during the Depression.
Well, and you mentioned your mother, but you didn't get that much time with your mother. She passed away when you were just 6 years old?
Yes. Yeah, she passed away. It was terrible. It was terrible. Then my dad split us up, our family, three of us, my brother, sister. We went to New Jersey to live with our grandmother, which wasn't very pleasant. I hate to say this, but it just wasn't. But then the other two went to my aunt's house, which they got treated very good over there. They were like little princesses and stuff. We dressed them up real neat and everything. And here we were living over there in Jersey with the grandmother, and she really didn't take good care of us. I can say that. Like you say, we had a lot of mush. That's the way it was, I guess. We just lived through it.
Yeah, it kind of sounds like you had to fend for yourself in many ways.
Well, I was kind of young to fend for myself, but yeah, my sister, she helped quite a bit. And my brother, he was not quite old enough yet to really... I think he was 12, so he wasn't much to help. But my sister that's still living, she's 102. She used to take care of me quite a bit. I really look up to her.
And you kept your sights set on the Navy that whole time? Were you always still dreaming about making that a career?
Of course, yeah. Well, not at that time I wasn't, because I wasn't on my mind at that time. Exactly. Not until after, my dad remarried. She was just wonderful. She took excellent care of us. She was the best mother you could ever ask for, stepmother, but to me, she was like my real mother. My mother and my biological mother, they were both friends, but at different times. So my dad and her got together after my mother passed away, and things worked out fairly good after that.
So did that bring all the family back together and under one roof?
Not entirely. My older sister got married, and then she got married, and after that, they had a child of their own named Elaine. And she's another very wonderful person. I'll never forget her either. A baby sister.
Well, I don't want to leave anything out from those teenage years, but I know that eventually you ended up, as so many American young men, helping out in something called a CCC camp. Where was that, and why was that something that you chose to do? What was the point of it?
The whole point of it was to help supply monetary with the family, my father and all. But like I say, he wasn't making much money. So it was to help keep me off the streets, for one thing, and to help the family with money. So I joined a CC camp. They sent me up to the Poconos in Pennsylvania. I got $8, and my father got $22 for the whole 30 days. We built roads in the Poconos, and we made like shelters for hunters when they went out deer hunting and stuff like that. And built a lot of roads. So I did a lot of surveying and stuff like that for roads and everything. And they kept us pretty busy. We worked for the state, but we were disciplined with the Army. Actually, we were in the Army. We dressed like Army. We had regular Army uniforms on, and we drilled part-time, whatever we could. We went to school, and then, like I said, we worked for the state whenever we could, too. I think I stayed down there a little over 6 months. After that, I come home, went to work for a candy factory, making the little gumballs that you put in the machine, put a little penny in there, and you would get a gumball. But that's what I did before. Then I joined the Navy after that.
So just trying to figure out the math on that, does that mean you dropped out of high school before that?
Yes, I did, yeah. But I was making up for it, in the CC camp.
Sure.
So we kind of went to school there. So it wasn't quite the diploma that I wanted, but it had to be. That's the way things were in them days. You had to do what you had to do.
And, you shared. You were born into the Navy. You always wanted to be in the Navy. But when you decided it's time for me to join the Navy in 1941, your dad didn't think that was such a good idea after all?
No, he didn't. He didn't think it was such a good idea, because he knew, being a military man, he knew the war was coming. And I guess I kind of did too, but I didn't think I was ever going to get killed or anything or wounded. I thought it was just going to be glory. And they started the draft. President Roosevelt started a draft, I believe it was in 1939. You were supposed to join for a year and then come home. And I just, instead of getting drafted into the Army, I said, I want to go in the Navy. So I joined the Navy. I went down to the recruiting office, and I was too small, didn't weigh enough. And the recruiting officer says, okay, kid, go out and eat a dozen bananas and come back after lunch. So I weighed enough to get in the Navy.
And that actually worked?
It worked.
And that actually worked?
It worked. It worked like the charm.
So you're 17, and now you're in the Navy, but you don't know that less than 2 months later, war is going to come to the U.S. So where were you on December 7th, 1941?
We was on our way to to go aboard the New Mexico. They were shipping us out to Norfolk. On the way in, the New Mexico was escorting ships to England, and then the war broke out, and they had to get back into Norfolk. On the way back, the New Mexico, there was that darkened ship. All the running lights was off because there were submarines out there. And also that they knew this because the Reuben James had just got sunk. So they was very cautious. This brand new freighter comes out of, I think, Boston. It was Oregon. The New Mexico rammed it right in the middle. And probably pretty bad. They didn't think they were going to sink. New Mexico had to get back into Norfolk. So they asked the captain of the Oregon if he was okay. And he says, yeah, I could make it back into port. It wasn't too far out. But unfortunately, they didn't make it back in. They sunk. But fortunately, most of the men was rescued off of that ship. It's kind of funny. He said, well, we were the first one to sink a ship. And it was an American ship. It wasn't very funny, but it was just a top secret, actually. They didn't want us to talk about it or anything outside of the New Mexico. It was kind of really a top secret, and I think it is today. I'm not really sure, but...
Well, and I'm just imagining being in your shoes. Here, you've had this lifelong idea, I'm going to be in the Navy. Now you're in the Navy. You're on the ship. You find out Japan has attacked Pearl Harbor. We're in a war now. And then the next thing you know, you're sinking an American ship. So, I mean, you probably want to find a reset button or something somewhere, right?
Yes, we did, yeah. We wanted to get back into the, get all the guns on there as fast as we could, you know. And then they had this new top secret thing coming out, which was the radar. And it looked like a big box spring. And they had Marine guards all around it. You know, I had no idea what the heck they were bringing aboard. They say, this is all top secret, stay away from it. But anyway, they mounted it up on the mast, and this is what it was. It was a regular radar. Most ships didn't have that in them days. Before that, we used to have to climb up in a crow's nest as a lookout for the ship. That was our radar at our time. But they got this brand new thing they called radar, and that saved a lot of lives, I'll tell you.
Well, and I want to hear about your role on the New Mexico and some of the places you sailed on that battleship. But I'm curious, too, just the fact that you're on a battleship and you hear about Pearl Harbor, and eventually I'm sure you saw some of the photos or the film from Pearl Harbor, and the most severe damage is all to ships exactly like yours, you know, the Arizona, the Oklahoma, the Utah. How did that hit you to see a ship exactly like yours with guys in the very same position as you and they're not here anymore?
Yeah, it was devastating, especially being so young. And all my glory went down the tubes. being a big hero and everything, it just went down the tubes. Knowing we were, at that time, I thought we were the only three battleships that were left was the Idaho, the Mississippi, and the New Mexico. To me, that was the only three left. So we had to get back and get into the Pacific as soon as we could. This is what they did. And we went through the Panama Canal, and that was something marvelous to see, too. And went into San Diego, San Pedro, one of the two, was our first port. And then we put more guns, and I guess different kind of radar on there, too. And I was waiting to get over to the Pacific. We went to pull into Pearl Harbor. When we got to Pearl Harbor, oh, that was the most devastating thing I ever seen in my whole life, was pulling into Pearl Harbor. The oil in the water was, it looked like at least a foot thick. Everything was full of oil, black oil all over the place. And to see these ships damaged and tore up, torpedoed, it just made you feel so humble, you know. All these guys that got killed on there. And, it was only a seaman deuce, I guess, at the time, but that was lower than anything. So they put me on a fire watch, and they sent me over to USS West Virginia. I guess some of these the bodies that were still in there, they were cutting them with an acetylene torch, and they cut these bodies out of there. And I looked at that, and I said, what did I get myself into? You know, it was something else. Anyway, I lived through that. We went out patrolling after that. We ended up headed for Guadalcanal. And I understand, before we got out of there, there's a Japanese fleet coming at us. And Admiral Halsey turned around our three ships, which was the Idaho and New Mexico and the Mississippi, turned us back into the Pearl Harbor. He didn't want us to get sunk. He wanted to save the ships. He knew we were outgunned because the Japanese battle wagons was much, much bigger than us and much faster than us old battle wagons. And then we pulled it back into Pearl Harbor before any big action ever happened. With us, anyway.
It's time for our first break, but there's quite a bit to come with 95-year-old Calvin Pesetta of Las Vegas, Nevada. When you spend 30 years in the Navy, you've got a few stories. Find photos and a short video with Calvin online at hometownheroesradio.com or the Hometown Heroes Facebook page, and we'll be right back after this. If you spent much time listening to Hometown Heroes, you've probably heard veterans from all over America talking about the mission of the Honor Flight Network, taking World War II veterans free of charge to see their memorial in Washington, D.C.
I wanted to see it. I've always wanted to see it since they built it. And to see all those guys there that did survive, and then they get emotional. Pretty soon you get emotional, too.
I tell you, that honor flight, I just can't believe what a wonderful deal it is.
Everywhere people came up to us, military guys and civilians, and wanted to shake our hands and thank us for all we did. I kept saying there were 16 million of us, you know, and I only did a little piece. But it was just an emotional high.
When it comes to our men and women in uniform, all gave some, and some gave all. A reality underscored as veterans visit the World War II, Korea, and Vietnam memorials and Arlington National Cemetery.
All those white crosses going to your heart, you just know that there's good guys there, but they had to die. For what? So you could live.
And while they are still living, Honor Flight gives the rest of us a chance to express our gratitude. Won't you encourage the World War II veterans in your life to put in applications for this all-expenses-paid journey to their memorial?
It does something for each of us who have been veterans who go back, whether we're a guardian or whether we're honored as a guest on the flight. It completes our life, really. Gives us a sense of fulfillment that we weren't able to have before, I think.
If you live near me in Central California, find Central Valley Honor Flight at cvhonorflight.org. Wherever you're listening, there's a hub in your area, and you can find it on the national website, honorflight.org. Sign up a veteran, volunteer to help, or donate to this important and time-sensitive mission. It's amazing what it means to these members of our greatest generation.
I'm telling you, they make you feel so good and so wonderful. Let me tell you, I can't preach enough about this. You listening?
The manner in which we were treated and greeted and acted toward was just awesome. It made me believe that the people of the United States are just wonderful.
Time is of the essence. Team up with Honor Flight today and help give our veterans one more tour with honor.